So we're continuing in our witness series where we're sharing stories of God's love at work in ordinary lives. And it's been such a joy to sit down with people and to hear how God has shown his love to them in the everyday practicalities, the difficulties and the triumphs of an everyday life. We're building this around that understanding that God is our strength and refuge, an ever-present help in times of trouble. That Psalm 46 that's outside the front of the church that we've spoken the first few verses of week by week. This week, we're going to be talking about witnessing to new life, to the new life that God brings into our everyday. And it's such an important part of what it is to be a Christian, that it's not just based on the conviction that certain things are true, but indeed our own lives are changed. As Tom Wright says in his book, The Day the Revolution Began, that on the evening of Good Friday, the world was a different place because of what Jesus had done. So I want to go back into the Old Testament scriptures, a scripture that I was looking at and thinking about for last week. And this is from Isaiah 6. And in this account, Isaiah is taken up in a vision into the heavenly court. At the start, you will see that this is the year that King Uzziah died. We're in the 700s BC here. And Isaiah, who was a prophet to the northern kingdoms that went into exile earlier than the southern kingdom of Judah, he's prophesying to them. And this event happens to Isaiah in the year of the death of the king. Now, you can look up King Uzziah and you'll discover that King Uzziah started out as faithful and true, a good king of Judah. He was, in fact, the king of the southern kingdoms. And Uzziah then got ideas above his station and started burning incense in the temple, which was really the task of the priests. And he ended up with an illness. And in fact, he succumbed to that illness. He got leprosy. So this is the end of a difficult chapter in Judah's life. But it's the calling of Isaiah into an important ministry where he will share God's purposes, not just for Israel, but for peoples all over the earth and for what was to come. Some of the old divines called Isaiah the fifth gospel because there's so much in there about this suffering servant, the one who was to come and to bear the sins of Israel on behalf of Israel in order that Israel might be redeemed. And you can read about that in Isaiah 40, in Isaiah 43, in Isaiah 53. You know, by his stripes we're healed. All of those wonderful passages. But we're going to Isaiah 6, where Isaiah is caught up into a vision. And let's read that together now. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with six wings. Two wings they covered their faces, with two wings they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined. I am a man of unclean lips, and live among a people of unclean lips. And my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." And then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send and who will go for us?" And I said, Here I am. Send me. So let's watch together the video that we've taken for this week. And it's with great joy we're going to share together a conversation I had with Chris O'Brien. So Chris, thank you for agreeing to come and share a bit of your story today. Could you start just by telling us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, my name's Chris. I'm a Gorbrig boy, married with two kids, and I'm obsessed with Christmas. 122 days to go, as of today.
122 days to go to yeah. Christmas. So folks will be able to work out what date we're recorded this on.
I'll put it in the live chat on Sunday.
Lovely. Well, thanks for keeping us straight. And tell us a bit about your story.
Well, I used to come to this Sunday to school when it was Judith that was a minister back when I was wee, and I used to sit kind of just there on the floor in front of the pews there. I used to come up every Sunday, and my mum started making me bring my sisters as well, which was fun. But then kind of life happened, and I was playing football, our games got changed to Sundays, and you know, football happened on a Sunday, so I kind of got out of the way coming to church, and I met Donna, who's now my wife. Met her when I was at school. She was still at school, she was a year below me. And life just went on, had a number of different jobs, and kind of always kind of people jobs, working with people in terms of retail, or working with people in terms of caring, or working with people in terms of going to working at Saltersgate School. And now I work up at Gorbridge Primary School. And I've just always kind of had this love to work with people, help people, make sure that, you know, people know that there's people there for them, because sometimes life kind of throws you a card that makes you think that that's not the case. And also some experiences I've had growing up, I'm not saying I've had it the worst, but because there's people out there that have had it a lot worse than me, but if there's something I can do to help people and make them realise that no matter what, there's always love, and there's always somebody there for them, no matter how hard it is to see it sometimes, and I'd like to think I'm trying to do something right.
That's brilliant. And how have you witnessed God's love at work in your life?
Well, I've known you basically since you came to Gorbridge, since I was a wee teenager. And I've spoken to you about different things, even when I wasn't coming to the church. There's always been something in the back of my head saying, you need to go back to church, you need to go back to church. But when you get to kind of 18, 19, 20, the Saturday night's always good, but the Sunday morning isn't. So, you know, it's always been kind of one of these situations. And like I said earlier, life got in the way, and then I started playing football again. And that was always at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. And I would always kind of glance over, because we used to play down the Bing. That was our home pitch. And the steeple here, you can see it for miles. And I'd always kind of look and say, if I've not got a game, I'll maybe go up. And it always kept on niggling at me. And then it got to every January, I'd always have my New Year's resolution. At least once this year, I'm going to set foot back in the church. And then December would come, and then the same resolution would be made in the January. And then I had a couple of conversations with people about the Alpha course. And I was like, all right, that sounds pretty good. And then never thought nothing of it. And then it was a good few years ago now, bumped into yourself at the Gorbridge Gala Day.
At the Gala Day.
Standing outside the Playbus.
Yep.
When Rory was in.
Two dads sending their kids in the Playbus.
I know. And it was, I don't know how long we talked, but it was a good while. And you told me it started in September, the current Alpha course that was coming. And I thought, all right, okay. I'll maybe go along and see what's what. And that was in June, middle of June. So I had all summer. I went back to school in the August, and the teacher I was working with, she's an elder up at Pennycook South, one we said, the Happy Castle.
Right.
And she was saying, no, go, I want you to go. What have you got to lose? and you know they offer the free food. I was there. Funny story is though, I never knew about the free food, and I quickly made myself some risotto before I came down, wolfed it down because Donna was late in for work. Came in and sat and had two helpings of lasagna, so it was good.
That was a good night.
It was a good night. One of the first people I was introduced to was Colin Aitken, and he's been massive in terms of my journey. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to come back the next game week. And then within a couple of weeks, I think I missed one because I had a prior engagement, but I was there all the rest of the time. And within a couple of weeks, you know, I was arriving early to help set up. I was staying late to help clear up. I was trying to get involved with the questions as much as I could. I was trying to get involved in the discussions as much as I could. You know, I was just absolutely loving my Thursday nights. And then it was Alpha Saturday when we went up to Arniston House, and you know the different kind of break offs that you have for prayer, and it was the last one with the receiving the Holy Spirit. No, I'm colourblind, but I'm not like black white colourblind. I'm kind of very very mild colourblindness, and you put your hands on me, and I think Colin put his hands on me and prayed, and it was like, you know, when you go to the cinema and you've got the Odeon sign that's in, and you see all the kind of powder paints and it's all this vibrant colours, and that's what it was like. That's the only way I can kind of describe it. It was just amazing. I felt this warmth over me, and it was like something had been lifted for me that was weighing me down that I didn't know at the time was weighing me down. And I can remember you said to me, well, I'll see you on Thursday. And I says, no, I think I'll see you sooner than that. And next again day I was here, parked at the back, and that's where I've kind of been sitting ever since. And the first day I came on my own. The second time I came, I brought my daughter Kayleigh, and she absolutely loves it, and she loves God like wholeheartedly, and it's such a beautiful thing. And then the third week I came, I brought Donna, who was an atheist, and she was quite open about being an atheist. And she used to, it was funny because she would say she was an atheist, but I'd come back for Alpha and I'd tell her what we talked about, and she'd say, oh, ask Mark this question and ask Mark that question. And I used to think that you would think I was just making this stuff up to be awkward, but it was genuinely her questions. And she started showing a massive interest, and now she's really involved in the church. She comes to the Thursday fellowship groups, you know, she's done Alpha herself. So we come as a family, and it's what we do on a Sunday. We've made some amazing friends through the church. It's kind of broadened our outlook on life and how we are as people. We've started, our givens started becoming more, not necessarily monetary, because you know sometimes that can be a bit of a struggle for a lot of people, especially having two young kids, you know. But in terms of our time or anything else that we can give, you know, it's just been amazing, and seeing the transformation in her as well, who, like I say, when I first met her, she was kind of like a goth, but didn't know what to put the work in, so she was an emu.
Right.
So she was, you know, all dark makeup and choker chains, and listened to like heavy metal bands and all the rest of it. And
nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that, but she would have the atheism to go with it. And now I walk in, she's doing the housework, singing along to the top of her voice to Rent Collective.
Oh,
and
that's amazing.
You know, she's just amazing, and the kids are just, they love it here. Their discussions, I mean, there was one time Rory was out with my mum and they were talking about Jesus, and it must have been about Easter time, and talking about the resurrection, and one woman turned round and she was like tutting and shaking her head and all the rest of it. And anybody that knows my mum, old wrinkles, hi mum, she isn't backwards and coming forwards, so she encouraged the conversation. The conversation got a wee bit louder, and he was loving it. The old woman got up and moved away somewhere else. But it's just had a massive, massive impact on the whole family. My mum started coming. My mum was, she became a member, and she was baptised in the North Sea.
Yes.
Me being me, I was baptised on the only day I could be baptised, which was Christmas Day.
Christmas Day.
And that was within a couple of months of just starting Alpha, which was amazing. So it's had a massive, massive impact on not just my immediate family and my immediate life, but also my extended family as well. Even my friends ask me different questions. They say, well, this is in the Bible, so how come this? Or that's in the Bible, so who's that? And the answer I give them is all the time, I just read it, I never wrote it, you know. Mm-hmm. You want to find out yourself, go and have a look. So, yeah, it's had a massive impact.
That's brilliant. And there may be people watching just now, Chris, who are wondering about the Jesus stuff. Is there anything that you'd like to say to them?
My favourite verse is, now keep on getting this, Mark 35:7. Don't be afraid, just believe.
Ah, yes, don't be afraid. Mark 10.
Yeah.
37. That, I'm sure that's the, yeah, we'll need to look that up.
Yeah.
I'll get that done for the service. Don't be afraid, just believe.
Yeah, and it's, because I started multiple times through my whole, I'm going to go to church. I've never done it. I'd say, right, I'm going to start reading the Bible. And I start for Genesis, mm-hmm. and I try and work my way through it, and I'm like, this is just gobbledygook.
That's hard work.
So when I started coming here, they're like, no, read the Gospels first. So I read the Gospels, and that verse just kind of jumped out at me. And even though there is going to be lulls in your faith, and it's normal for everybody, I mean, I went through a really rough patch during lockdown in terms of where I thought my faith was going, and all the rest of it, you know, it's still there no matter how far down whatever path you're down. There's always it's like a motorway. You can only go so far before there's another lay-by or another off-ramp.
Yeah.
So you're never too far away from one of these slip roads, and that will always take you on the right path. There's always God's love in life. There's always somebody to help you. And, you know, different people have had different things happen in their life, and they've made decisions and done things for different reasons that have made sense to them at the time that might not have been right in the eyes of some other people. But, you know, we're not here to judge, we're here to love. And, yeah, God's just absolutely amazing. Jesus' love is just pure. I always kind of thought I'd grown up without a dad. You know, my granddad is kind of my dad. And yeah. Coming to church, I'm like, no, actually, my family's a lot bigger than what I ever imagined it could ever be, and yeah, my father's had my back the whole time, and I've just no always noticed it until the last few years.
That's wonderful, Chris. Thank you for sharing.
Cheers.
Wasn't that fantastic? I was really struck with the verses some of you will be looking up just now. And as Liam called through to us from the control room when we were doing the interview, is that don't be afraid, just believe, comes from Mark chapter 5, verse 36. It's an account where Jesus has been moving his way through the crowd. He's been asked to come and heal Jairus' daughter. Jairus, a leader at the local synagogue, was taking a great risk in making that request. And so he sends people to go through the crowd to find Jesus. But on the way, the lady touches the hem of his garment, who's had trouble with bleeding for many years, and is healed. And Jesus stops. And he stops and says, "Who touched me? I felt the power going out from me." And people say, "Well, the disciples are like, there's loads of people around about you. How can we tell?" But he said, "No, someone." And the lady comes forward. And he says, "Your faith healed you." Then they start out again. And people from Jairus' house said, "Don't bother the teacher anymore. Your daughter's died." And he overhears this. And Jesus says, "Don't be afraid. Just believe." There's a verse. You see, the new life that God gives us, the new life that we have in Him, is for a purpose. And we were speaking last week about that, when God gives us a purpose. But the new life that we're given is for something. It's to enable you to live the life that God has given you. At the start of Ephesians chapter 4, Paul writes this: "I, Paul, a prisoner for Christ, urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you've received." Jesus, at the end of his ministry in Matthew 28, says, "Teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and I'll be with you to the end of the age." The new life that we've been given is for a purpose. It's something to step into. It's something to be doing. I think for many of us, our Christian faith is as much about what we say yes to, be it in a discussion or there are a set of beliefs that we agree to. But it's quite a Western thing. It's quite a Western modern thing to believe something and then not to do that which flows from it. To know about and to do for Jesus are one and the same. And to have that new life and then to do, to live that new life, are one and the same. That story where Jesus speaks to Jairus and says, "Do not be afraid, just believe." Something awful is happening to Jairus at that point. He has had the news of the death of his daughter. They make their way to the house and they can hear the sound of the mourners as they gather around, weeping and going through that process of grieving, which is a community activity. And Jesus enters the place. He casts them out. He says, "She's not dead. She's only asleep." And then he says to her these words, "Talitha kum." "Little girl, get up." And she's risen from the dead. Asks her mother to make her some food because she'll be hungry, because she's had a rough day. And then gets on his way. New life, life from the grave. Now, as we've said before, of course, Jairus' daughter, Lazarus, the widow of Nain's son, they all had other funerals. All of us in this life, whether we see healing, we see restoration, whether we get through the cancer treatment or not, all of us will face that last day. But the new life that's given to us from Jesus, that lasts forever. That passage from Isaiah 6 where he's called. And I love Isaiah because he says, "Here I am, send me." And that vision, now that you know a little bit of the historical background, that vision happens in the heavenly temple that the earthly temple was meant to be a model of. And the challenges that had been had as King Uzziah had gone in there and burned incense himself and had ignored the way that things should have been done in the temple. This is a resetting of things back to where there should be. And seeing God himself, Isaiah is struck down and he says, "Oh no, I'm in trouble. I don't have the confidence of King Uzziah. I can't be here. I'm a man of unclean thoughts and unclean lips." And the seraphim takes the coal from the brazier and touches his lips and says, "This burning coal has cleansed you." And so when Isaiah says, "Here I am, send me," one thing is really clear, is that he does not yet have the character, he does not yet have the power to do that which he has committed himself to. And Isaiah was called to a tough calling. As you read on in that passage, you read that he's being sent to a people who are going to be deaf and blind. They're not going to do what he is calling them to do. The promises that he's giving them are for future generations to look back and say, "We're going to do that." So how do we stitch this all together with what Chris was saying? Chris was speaking about his sense of calling to help people, which predates him getting his trust in Jesus sorted out. Predates him having that amazing experience of seeing all those colors as Colin and I were praying for him up at Arniston House to be filled with the Holy Spirit. That inkling was there. He wanted to help people. And that came from a whole background of having experienced great suffering and pain and a desire to help people in their time of need. That's a noble thing to commit your life to. As it is noble to commit yourself to be married, to commit yourself to bring up children as he's done as well. But all of those things require resources that we ourselves may not have. The life that Jesus calls us to live without the empowering that comes from the receiving of that new life is as impossible as Jairus daughter raising herself from the dead. I'll say that again. The power, the life that we've been called to live that without the empowering of Jesus, without the infilling of the Spirit, is impossible. It is as impossible as Jairus' daughter raising herself from the dead. If we live our Christian life without that empowering, if we live that Christian life by what we believe but not trusting that that new life is in us, renewing our thinking, orienting our hearts, and setting our loves in order, guiding us day by day, if we lose that vital sense, then we will become exhausted really, really quickly. I think one of the things that Christians experience most often, or well-intentioned people who do not trust in Jesus, is that sense, I can't do this anymore. I've run out of steam. I can't do this. What's being asked of me, the situation that I face, the life circumstances that I'm coming up against are too much for me to deal with. I'm done. Now, all of us get to that point. All of us get to that point. But here I would remind you that the Son of God incarnate in this world, the Son of Man that Daniel had promised, the suffering servant of Isaiah, our own Jesus, though he had the ability to fulfill the law and live a righteous life for 30 years, the miracles, the astonishing things beyond that, none of those started till after his baptism. He needed the empowering. He needed the guidance, as he puts in John 5, of doing what he sees his Father doing before him. And as he says in John's Gospel, he breathed the Holy Spirit on his disciples in the upper room. He breathed so that they will receive. Without the Spirit of Jesus, without the new life that flows from the cross, the Christian life is not difficult. It's impossible. Now, some of you may have been watching telly this week, and there's a new series on Amazon Prime, those of you who've got it, that is called The World's Toughest Race. I'm going to pull it up here. There's Bear Grylls, the guy who advertises Alpha, this very self-same Alpha course that that Chris did, and also is a kind of adventure explorer. And many of you will have watched his exploits, be it climbing Everest or getting himself out of difficult situations. Well, the world's toughest race is a thing called the Eco Challenge. The Eco Challenge is a 670-kilometer race through the jungles of Fiji. It involves people canoeing, involves people mountain biking, abseiling, climbing, and lots of hiking through difficult terrain, swimming. Diane spotted this on Amazon Prime. We've been watching this week. And so what I want you to think about is the way that athletes, people who are really good at what they do, prepare for what they do. Having done the moonwalk, which is a walk, a 26-mile walk, I know how much preparation it took to get to the point where I could walk it. Ross and Sarah Claire and folks like that, they know how much effort goes into being able to run a marathon, to run 26 and a bit miles. How much training does it take to be able to trek 670 kilometers through the jungle? And those of you who are doing your maths, it's about 400 miles. They've got 11 days to do it. The good people are expected to do it in 5 or 6 days. It's almost unbelievable effort that takes, and conditioning. And some of the people who are doing it are eligible for a bus pass. There's even a guy doing it who's got early stage dementia. There was a team, unfortunately they didn't make it through the whole race, for people who have survived life-changing injuries when serving with the military. People from all over the world. It's an inspiring thing. If you get a chance, have a look at it, even if it's just a clip on YouTube. But the dedication it takes to be able to do something like that is the result of some conscious choices and some deliberate effort. That's clear to see. One of the things that I loved was watching watching Team Great Britain in the 2012 Olympics, And we were hosting it there. It was in London. It was a United Kingdom thing. And people from all over the British Isles and Northern Ireland were expending themselves, be it the famous rowers, or be it, I mean, even in tennis, Andy Murray managed to do wonderful things in tennis at the 2012 Olympics. And we just got to celebrate as a country the exploits of all these people who had, through many years, dedicated themselves to do nothing else but that sport well. That takes dedication. Now, I remember I used to be a civil servant, and one of the, Allison, who used to work on the desk beside me, she was tall and she had broad shoulders and she was a good shot putter. And she'd been told that if she wanted to, she could commit to train to be part of Team GB. But she said, I said, why did you choose not to do it? And she said, I'd have to be up at 5 every morning, running around cold parks and doing weightlifting and all that stuff. I don't want to do that. Even though that she had the physique and the skill to throw a cannonball further than I could, which is humbling. It takes a series of choices, of deliberate effort, to be an elite athlete or to be a successful business person. And even then, it may not work out. To understand an area of academia, to be a researcher, to be a good architect, to be the mother of a large family, to be a community-minded person, all of those things, if you're going to do them well, take a series of decisions and deliberate effort. Many of you will know that many of our churches are empty of young people over the West. Because on a Sunday morning, many of our young people are doing sporting activities. It used to be you didn't play sport on the Sabbath, as Eric Liddell would tell you, or Jonathan Edwards in his triple jumping days would tell you, that they decided not to compete on the Sabbath, and that was a big thing for them. But obviously sporting, as people have looked for other ways to structure their life, sporting activities on a Sunday have taken over. And the easy thing for me as a minister is to be a bit upset about that and say, oi, you know, the spiritual health of our young people really matters. But then when I step back and look at the church that I was brought up in and some of the ways that that church did not do what it was supposed to do, then many people from my generation have concluded that they're going to get a better ethical training, better discipline, better sense of how to live a fruitful life from a coach or from a referee than they would at church. And hand on heart, I have to say that they may have a point in certain cases. That troubles me. Because when we have young people who are facing, it's all out war if you're a Christian. If you're trying to live a Christian life and you're going to primary school, high school, going into university, you're going to hit up against things which challenge your worldview, challenge your character, challenge your ethics, challenge what you think about the world every single day. You also may well come under a lot of pressure because of what you believe and the actions that flow from that. And what we do on a Sunday, and I'm so proud of our young people's ministry people here, Ross and his team, what Joel's doing, what Agnes and Helen are doing with our children, even what we're doing at creche, that there's that sense of responsibility that we're preparing them to live a life that's full of the power of the Spirit and in Jesus' name, Monday to Saturday as well. And in many ways, church, Sylvester Stallone, who's an interesting character, but I had this poster at the front of the church for a while, and Sylvester Stallone said this, church is gym for the soul. Church is gym for the soul. And so it should be. So it should be. As we gather together, we should be cheering one another on. As it says in the book of Proverbs, the iron sharpens iron. The people who love Jesus, that we encourage people on. Chris was saying there about how, you know, he's had challenges during this lockdown faith-wise. And what is it that helps us through those times where we feel a challenge is faith? And it's other people who trust Jesus, other people who are walking that walk, who are doing the things in their life to to keep their faith at the boiling point, as Bill Hybels would say. So, how are we tying this all this together? Well, it's this. That to witness the power of the new life that Jesus has won for us, we have to trust him for it and lay hold of it. But it's not an experience in the past. It's about what we do and how we live. It's about what we do and how we live. That new life, remember the children of Israel in the desert. The children of Israel in the desert were given manna to eat. And manna, if we could just come back to my face, thank you. And manna was something that you could collect for 6 days of the week. It was nourishing. It's the same, you know, but it went off day by day. Except if you picked it the day before the Sabbath. If you collected it on a Friday, it lasts through the Sabbath. But if you didn't get rid of the stuff, if you didn't eat the stuff you collected before, it went moldy. Or as we like to say in Scots, foosty. That's a perfect image of what it is to live in the new life that Jesus has given us. That as he pours new life into us, we live in the reality of that new life. Because his new life is his love is his new life. His presence with us is all of that. It's just different ways of describing the same thing. Your presence in me, Jesus, light the way by the power of your word. That's something that we sing together. That whole understanding of as he pours in up and through us, so we live it. And as we live it and expend it and go back to him to be refilled, so there's an ever overflowing supply of that new life like the overflowing cup of Psalm 23. That's how it's intended to work. It's not a one-off experience in our past that we can attest to and share. It's an everyday reality where every morning we wake up and say, good morning, Father, fill me afresh. Would you give me what I need to do what needs to be done this day? Would you give me the power to love my family? Would you give me the courage to forgive those who wronged me yesterday? Would you help me as I try and help people? That wonderful thing that Chris was saying about his desire to help people. The love that we help people with comes from Jesus. Once upon a time, it was the famous atheist. I think it was Christopher Hitchens. It might have been Richard Dawkins. It was one of those two. I do not want to get that wrong. However, they're not here to defend themselves. But they commented on something that Mother Teresa of Calcutta had said when someone asked her, why do you help beggars in Calcutta? And she said this. She said, I help them because Jesus called me to help them. And she said, so the interviewer pressed her and said, so you don't help them because you have compassion on them, because you're motivated by compassion. And she says, the primary reason that I am helping beggars in Calcutta is because Jesus has called me to do it. And the comment was made, well, her motivation's all wrong. It should come from her humanity that she does this. And the atheist gentleman was sharing and saying that this was wrong in some way, and that actually her motivation, I mean, what if that motivation was to do something, if she believed God had called her to do something that was wicked, would she do that? And it was this theoretical conversation. I suppose he was quite brave to share that point of view. But he's completely missed the point. Can you, in your own strength, help people in need for your whole life and not grow weary and bitter and sustain in that? Well, you probably can. Maybe. Can you? But if Jesus has called you to that, as Jesus has called Chris to help people in their education, to sit with folks and to be patient. He was telling me some of the stuff he was doing in the provision at Gorebridge Primary, and we obviously can't share details, but Chris has great patience and good humor in the face of difficult circumstances. Can you do that if God's called you to do that? And if he's called you, that he'll equip you? That he will give you everything. We have everything we need for life and godliness, Peter writes in his letter to the church. That's how it's meant to happen. Now, there's general grace, and we can get encouragement from people God has made to do it without his strength, without his new life, but that's not as intended. So, living in the new life that God has for us is about what we do and who we are. It's about what we're about and who we intend to be. And that, of course, means it's about choices and priorities. And the thing I love about Chris's story is that he's got this nagging thing that God wants him to re-engage with church. He wants a kind of inherited faith from the wider community, from his family, to become an owned faith. And he doesn't take those steps, and he doesn't take those steps. I remember chatting with him. He came to see me when he was 17. And it was about, it was the thick end of 10 years later where we met at the play bus. And he hadn't done anything about it. It'd been there as a good intention. And he'd seen some tough years in the intervening years, good things and tough things. But when we spoke, there was something in that. And of course, it's involving, he was talking there about Colin and other people who were cheering him on. And he turned up at Alpha, and he'd had his risotto. He got his double helping of lasagna. Thank you, Evelyn. And he's never looked back. Because in that, he discovered that there was a much bigger family for him to be a part of. There was stuff to be doing, that church was gym for the soul, that he could involve himself in the life here and involve his family in the life here. And because I remember having the conversation with him, he was like, Mark, Donna wants another dog. We've got enough pets. And I said, okay, I hear you. Can you help us sort it out? And I said, Donna, you want another dog? And Donna said, yeah, I want another dog. Oh, we've got too many pets. I says, Chris, you want Donna to do Alpha, don't you? He says, aye. So I says, well, why not? Can you see where I'm going with this, Chris? Why don't you say, let's get a dog, but you got to do Alpha? And that's what Donna did. And Donna's not looked back. And now they've got Dave the dog. Dave Growl. And if you didn't laugh at that, you haven't figured out his taste in music. It's about what we do and who we are. It's about choices and priorities. Friends, to witness the new life that God has given us, we don't just need to accept Jesus at the start of our faith journey or receive it from our parents if we've never known a time that we haven't had that trust in Jesus, which is a wonderful thing. But day by day, we need to go back to the source and to be filled afresh and realize that we're leaky and realize that we come up against stuff in ourselves and in the world around about us that opposes that new life. And just like Jairus' daughter, each day we need to hear Jesus speak those words to us. Little girl, get up. Little boy, get up. Big boy, get up. Big girl, get up. Don't be afraid. Just believe.